Welcome to this episode of the My Journey as a Physicist podcast. Each episode features an interview with a physicist to learn about their work, their interests outside of physics, and their professional journey of how they ended up where they are today. Season 2 features physicists involved in the particle physics planet community known as Snowmass. Hope you enjoy today's episode. Welcome, Marcella. Could you briefly introduce yourself? What is your current job?
Sure. I am assistant professor at the University of Michigan in the physics department.
Okay, great. And then what type of research do you do?
My area of research is in the interface between physics and astrophysics. In particular, I am interested in figuring out what is going on with dark energy, which is making the expansion of the universe accelerate. We know it's a well-known theory that our universe started very small and is expanding ever since for 13 billion years. But we don't know what is causing this expansion to speed up. This is a recent phenomenon in the last, you know, maybe 5 billion years or so of the universe. And dark energy is what we call this unknown form of energy that causes this acceleration to happen. The focus of my research is to try to figure out what that is.
Can you describe how do you approach to even answer like this type of question? Can you describe a little more in detail like what it is that you do?
Yes, the experiments we do, they are actually astronomy or astrophysics experiments in nature. They are what we call cosmic surveys using telescopes, cameras, and spectroscopic instruments on large telescopes. We target hundreds of millions, sometimes billions of galaxies to figure out, you know, to map out the universe using those data sets. So that is very different from what some of our colleagues in physics do, because we don't make dark energy in the lab, or we don't accelerate dark energy particles somewhere to study them. Instead, we take an approach where we build the best instruments that we can, very large and very complex instruments, and we put them on a large telescope and we try to map out the universe that way.
Okay. When you say like large telescope, what kind of telescope are we talking about? Like what kind of light are you measuring? And then like, is this something that's on land? Is this something that you shot up into space?
Mm-hmm. So in particular, in my research group, we focus primarily on ground-based telescopes. So these telescopes are located on mountaintops in remote areas of the world, some of them in Chile, some of them in Hawaii or Arizona. You know, typically you want to go to the top of a mountain to make sure that you have very clean atmosphere to observe the sky. And the observations are done in optical and near-infrared wavelengths. And, you know, the size of telescopes we are talking about is the mirror diameter is 4 meters or 6.5 meters. So they're very large facilities that we employ for this type of research.
And then for like this astronomical type work, do you ever actually get to visit like these telescopes, or do you just like read data from your lab?
Yes, this is really fantastic because we do have the opportunity, not as often as I would like, but we do have the opportunity to go to the site. And right now, for example, one of my graduate students is in Chile. He relocated there in November of last year to help with the construction and commissioning of a new camera, the LSST camera on Vera Rubin Observatory. It's brand new. It's gathered right now. So when I was a graduate student and a young postdoc, I also had, you know, extended periods of time where I was at the telescope site helping put together the camera, helping making things work, and also other trips since then where we go to take data, to make observations, and so on. Now, of course, that much of the activities are automated, so we need much smaller teams on site than we did in the past. So not everybody in a large collaboration go very often. So right now, for example, in another project I work on, which is called DESI, I have not been yet there in person. I have done observations remotely from my computer.
Can you describe what collaborations look like in your field of work?
Sure. So these collaborations, they are, I would say, considered large for, you know, physics, in the sense that oftentimes when the general public thinks about research in physics, it's still common that people have that mindset of one researcher perhaps working together with one partner and two students perhaps in a project, right? This is not really the mode that we operate anymore in this field. The collaborations that we work in are, you know, with 100, 300, sometimes even 1,000 members, and they are complex organizations. I think that the other subfield that has comparable, even larger collaborations would be collider physics and particle physics. And this is a similar, perhaps not as large, but similar, you know, scale of things.
Okay, very interesting. Yeah, that's really cool. And that's, I'm really fascinated by this work because it does seem kind of like different from, you know, a lot of other people who I've talked to who are like into accelerators or they're smashing things together. So with like this different approach in trying to learn about dark energy or discover it or whatnot, like, do you see the two feet like approaches as like competing with each other or like being more complementary? Like, or like, how are the goals sort of like similar or different between these different approaches?
That's an excellent question. The way I see this is that we are in the field of physics, right? We want to understand how the universe works at its most fundamental level. And for a long while, we thought that the approach of particle physics, of going there and smashing particles together or producing them at the laboratory, that this was, and it is still a very powerful approach today. We still pursue much of our, you know, program as a field approach that way. Now, what we learned was that the more detailed our understanding of the universe at these smaller scales became, the more we learned, but we also understood that that knowledge was incomplete. So dark energy and dark matter, which I am sure you, if you haven't yet, you are going to talk to some of my colleagues about that topic. You know, dark energy and dark matter are two big open questions in the field. And it is remarkable the fact that currently the universe is completely dominated by these two things. About 2/3 of the universe is dark energy and 25% is dark matter. So all of the physics that we understand as the standard model of particle physics and all of that success that we've had accomplished as, you know, humans in understanding the universe, it actually accounts for, you know, only 5%. So I see that what we're doing is not only complementary, but I think it's the new frontier, you know, of understanding our universe at the most fundamental level. So that is the reason why I'm so excited about this. And I think quite a few people in the community are as well.
Yeah, fascinating. Can you describe what your involvement in SNOMASS is?
Sure. I'm one of the co-conveners for what we call the Cosmic Frontier. This is the subset of the community that is dedicated to topics such as dark matter, dark energy, and as well other ways that cosmic observations can probe fundamental physics. And this involves experiments such as the cosmic surveys that I was describing earlier, but also now we think that we could incorporate in our community as well new ways to observe the universe, for example, with gravitational waves, which is something very exciting as well for some of us, and as well a dark matter detection in various forms, right? Either via on-the-ground experiments that try to detect them using more traditional particle physics approach, but also using these cosmic surveys as well to map out the large-scale distribution of matter in the universe.
Okay, yeah. Can you sort of describe what your involvement with SNOMASS has sort of meant to you?
I think this is one of the activities that is really exciting and forward-thinking, right? So I think oftentimes when we are in the day-to-day activities of trying to finish that paper, trying to complete that analysis and going to that meeting and teaching and grading reports and whatnot, are often removed from that bird's eye perspective of thinking what is the future direction in the long term for this field. And so having the opportunity to step into the discussion at that level and having the opportunity to hear from colleagues and friends as well, because in this community, I think we build friendships for life in these collaborations. I think that being part of this community and being able to help define what path we are going to take over the next decade or even longer is really a privilege and something I'm very excited about.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Going back a little bit, Like, what got you interested in physics in the first place?
I was always a curious child, I think. I think that I, took the idea of asking the why of things, right, to the most extreme end possible, which was attempting to make a career out of understanding the why of things and how does the universe work and how the world around me works. In that regard, I feel like this is a path that I feel really at home in this space, right? And it's something that I really enjoy doing. And so this, from very early on, the curiosity about the world, I think, was something that was present. In practical terms, and speaking of the path that I took in academia, I am originally from Brazil, and I started my career at University of Espírito Santo, my home state in Brazil. And there I studied an undergraduate in physics, and my first contact with the topic of dark energy that was something that excited me ever since was in a seminar in my department, where a faculty member was giving a talk and suddenly mentioned the fact that 2/3 of the universe is completely unknown. So at that point, I realized that, this is probably something I should work on, right? We really should try to figure this out. I had no idea what that meant from the point of view of the actual physics underlying it at that stage. But as I progressed in studying more physics and also doing some research experiences as an undergraduate and then later master's and PhD, then things were becoming more and more clear and the path was becoming more and more the direction that we have right now.
Did you have to, like, when you're an undergraduate, because I talked to like other grad students who are like doing kind of like this astrophysical type work, but they didn't necessarily have like an astronomy background or anything when they're into it. Did you take any sort of like astronomy classes like that, or is it just purely the physics side of things?
As an undergraduate, I did not take any astronomy or astrophysics courses. I learned what I needed at that stage from materials and reading materials that my mentors provided when I was doing this undergraduate research experience. But later, when I went to graduate school, that was a different story. I did my PhD in astrophysics, so I did a whole series of courses in stellar astrophysics, extragalactic cosmology, and all that.
Fascinating. How are you able to, it's like something that like always like blows my mind with like space and all that stuff is just like the scale of like how big everything is. Like, how are you able to like visualize anything or like comprehend just like the massive size of everything, of like measuring the entire galaxy, right? Or the entire universe, or
log scale.
Yeah.
I mean, log scale, right? Well, I think that at some point you abstract from it and you really need to work with one step removed from that level of, you know, awe. And, you know, there's a separation between, I think, the intellectual understanding and the awesomeness of, you know, this big and vast and universe. So I think that oftentimes when you reduce the data into these real observable data points, we're talking about fluxes on a scale on, you know, a silicon chip that has been impacted by photons from a galaxy far, far away. At that point, you start, you know, cooking it down to a level that it becomes more understandable and easier to grasp, right? And easier to code as well to do your analysis. So usually I try to make sure that I live closer to that end of things, you know, so that we can work and be efficient.
During your career as a physicist, if you feel comfortable sharing, were there any obstacles that you had to overcome?
Sure. I think that in any career that is as competitive as ours, and you probably know quite well that it is often hard to get into the programs that are the best programs and then to get the access to the resources to do your research. And those challenges that we all have to face. And some of us come into these challenges with varying degrees of preparation and sometimes some people with more advantages than others, right? That makes things perhaps a little bit unfair. And I think that in my case, I was definitely affected by some of those factors in my life. But at the same time, I think it has been a journey of growth, you know, and I think in that regard, most of these obstacles, I think that when passing those and where I am today, I think I'm stronger now and things are working well, I think, on that direction.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. When you're not working or, you know, in the lab and doing, you know, physics and your full-time job, like, what do you do for fun? Like, do you have hobbies or things that you do to take a break outside of work?
Well, at the moment, I have to say that when I'm not at work, my life has been quite busy with a toddler, right? So I have a small child who will turn 2 years old now in September. So this has been a wonderful experience and also something very different from the typical activities that we are pursuing as part of our career path. So I think that one has been keeping me busy enough. I'm learning a lot about child development, especially for multilingual kid. And this is, it's been fun.
Very, very nice. Well, kids, do you like try to teach them like physics already?
Oh, maybe too early for that, but I'm pretty sure that it comes, you know, comes with the territory with both parents being physicists. This one, I think, will not escape.
Very nice. And so then sort of like wrapping up a little bit, like, do you have any advice that you would give students or young researchers kind of the early stages of their physics careers?
So I think that there is a lot in the academic career path that are not written rules anywhere, you know, or advice and such that comes in the form of informal mentorship and being aware, you know, of the opportunities in your surroundings, sometimes opportunities to gain experience with research, or sometimes opportunities to gain experience in the real world with some other work activity that later will be useful for your academic path. It could be in computing or could be in engineering sometimes, right? So I think that sometimes, it's not always, but sometimes students tend to really focus on the structured academic path that is given to them in the form of a curriculum and credits and, you know, all that stuff that is important. And I'm not to say that people should take those things lightly and requirements and so on. This is important. You need that to get your degree. But there's also another level of taking responsibility for your future and your career that requires you to look more broadly. And that sometimes means, you know, listening to a podcast and then having this, you know, other layer of thoughts of like, oh, in what ways can I perhaps advance a career prospect by, for example, attending that seminar that is happening over there, which perhaps will give me ideas and will introduce me to people that later can encourage me into a path that I had not otherwise thought about, right? It's not to say that if you don't do it today, then that those opportunities will not happen. But I think that there is a lot there that students can take a little bit of more control of in their lives in preparing and being proactive in looking for opportunities in that way. And I think that the subset of the students that I see that are more proactive in that way, they tend to be more successful. So I would encourage people to look for ways to do that.
Yeah, fantastic. I kind of want to go back to when you mentioned like you attended this seminar that was kind of like a guiding or like influential moment for you. Do you see kind of this dark energy, you know, focus being your interest that you're interested in for like entire, you know, the rest of your career? Or are there like other things that you also like possibly interested in maybe like exploring down the road?
I am still interested primarily in the dark energy problem. Now, what has changed over time since when I was an undergraduate student is my approach to it, you know. So early on, for example, I thought I was going to be a theorist. So I thought I was going to solve this problem by trying to come up with a model or theoretical explanation that I could propose that other experimentalists would go there and do. I honestly didn't think that I would have the talent or the opportunity to develop the talent to become an experimentalist myself. That has changed completely. So afterwards, when I went to graduate school, and then I learned about all of the many observational techniques, and I actually had the opportunity, for example, to go to a summer school and see the different collaborations that are working with the new data sets and how developing those experimental techniques and making them more precise and more accurate was really a key point, because otherwise we cannot really distinguish between the various theories that are being proposed. And so that shifted my mindset. And over time, I again evolved in a different way. For example, early on, I didn't think that gravitational waves were going to play such a role. You know, I did not think or imagine that we would be in a scenario where detection of gravitational waves happens, you know, every day. But we are there now, and this means that we have new opportunities. So when that new opportunity came, I switched gears in my mindset and my research program in order to embrace this new opportunity. And that's where DES gravitational wave project that I launched in 2014, 2015, that was the motivation to do it at that point, right? Was like, oh, maybe there will be a new way of attacking this problem that I'm interested in, and I want to be the first one to pursue it. So I try to do that.
Fascinating. Yeah, all of that sounds like super, super cool work. I love it.
I think it's cool, right?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for taking the time to come on and talk with me. It was fun talking with you and learning about your work.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. And I really appreciate the opportunity to discuss all of this stuff with your audience. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. This podcast was created by Brian Stanley and Professor Wei-Win Lin. Season 2 was edited by Varley Sakorikar. Thank you for listening.